And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, Ahsoka, with a group of abducted younglings, find themselves trapped on a Tredosian moon, prey in an elaborate and cruel hunt. There will be redneck lizards riding around their space jeeps, and a bunch of new youths, and everyone gets a girl crush on Ahsoka! We're talking about Padawan Lost this week. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing good. Riding on a sugar high from our last episode.
Yeah, those were really good. Oh my god. As I sit here and eat Jelly Bellies.
Jelly Bellies are just to fill the gap between the next piece of candy at the end of this episode.
Yeah, I mean, there's some peach rings in there, because, Lord, I love peach rings. Mm. But I'm not going to eat the peach rings while we do this, because I like to, suck on them and, suck all the sugar off and then just, let them melt for, 15 minutes in my mouth.
I just put my tongue through the middle of the peach ring and just let it sit there. Bleh.
I do that, too.
Well, the name of my band used to be the Peachy Nichis, and that was our official candy that we would all eat was peach rings.
Oh, that's so cool. I love peach rings.
They had peach rings that you could buy around here that were, a generic brand that were called Peachies, so... That's what we would eat. That was our official candy.
No, if you ever come to Atlanta, everything's named Peachtree.
I was just going to say, plenty of peaches in down, when you start getting down into Georgia, that's for sure.
When people are just like, I'm looking for Peachtree Street. And you look at it and you're like, which one?
Yeah.
Way more specific than that. Are you looking for the one near the Congress Center, the one in Buckhead, the one up in Lawrenceville? Where are you looking? There's 20 Peachtree Streets. Be more specific, please.
We have a neighborhood garden, and somebody planted a peach tree in the neighborhood garden, and it's not happy in this environment. This is not the right place to grow a peach tree.
Aww.
It's not doing well. Yeah, it grew one peach last year. Had one scraggly peach on it, and I kept watching it, and I'm like, oh, it's getting bigger, and then somebody picked it eventually.
We have a peach tree in our front yard, but it's a wild peach tree, so there are these tiny little sour peaches. But they're good.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah, they're
crabapple trees we got up here.
Yeah, oh, we have crabapples too, but we don't have them on our property. My grandfather has a crabapple tree, though. But yeah, these little peaches are about the size of a golf ball. And the majority of the peach is the pit.
Is the pit, I would imagine, yeah.
But you can, bite into it, right around it, and, cut off, the very little, flesh, but it's really good because it's, super sweet and sour at the exact same time.
Sounds delicious.
They are. Until you find bugs in them, and then they're not so delicious.
Yeah, well, that's...
We don't, feed them or anything. I'm finishing off the last of my Krispies from last week. Because it was only, 10 minutes ago for us. if you're wondering what I'm talking about, listen to last week's episode when I was eating Krispies. Yeah, okay. So, ready to talk about human trafficking?
I am ready.
All right, so, human trafficking, ready?
Uh-huh.
All right, Padawan Lost is the 65th episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars, and it aired on April 1st, 2011. It was written by Bonnie Mark and directed by Dave Filoni. Some extra information for you. Gwendolyn Yao is the voice of Khalifa, who also did several other characters on Clone Wars, including Nalase, Peppy Bo, and Kato Parsidi. Sunil Malhotra, I didn't mean to mess up your voice, voices Jinx. He is also Prince Wu in another one of my favorite shows of all time, Legend of Korra. Oh my god, Prince Wu, I love him. He's like one of the best like characters ever introduced in Korra. And Omira was voiced by Cam Clark, who has done a slew of voice works from the Snorks, which I watched. Yeah, the Snorks. From, like, you know, the underwater Smurf people?
Scott Gardner and I used to make fun of that show when we were little kids, because when we would write scripts for our Star Wars parodies and the R2 character would make a sound, we would write it as Snork, and then all of a sudden there was a TV show called The Snorks.
Oh, see, I used to love that show when I was a kid, too. I would always watch it. He also, Cam Clark also did Tailspin, several generations of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Captain Planet, The Tick, Metal Gear Solid, Call of Duty, Naruto, Kingdom Hearts, Avengers, Earth Mightiest Heroes, and Monster High. He has done a lot of work. Good job for you, Cam Clark. In the episode Futurette, Dave Filoni says, I wanted to push the idea of organic environment more than we have ever done before. I wanted a complete saturation of vegetation to make it feel like we are in this jungle. Bramble, briar patch. I started describing this big tangled mess of a canopy where, like, rabbits would go and hide in the thickets. There's these little tiny people on these giant branches twisting around and everything. It would be easy to get lost in this environment. The problem becomes, how do you make a set out of this? What I resolved to do was have the modelers build sections of this canopy. Once they had roughly built it all, I went into the world and I scouted the world out as if it was a real world, but it was digital. I found all the places I wanted to shoot in there. Trees and grass and things like that have always been a challenge for us. There's just so much geometry involved. Often rocks and trees look like these geometric shapes. They lack the detail and spontaneity that the real world has. I'm not trying for photorealism, but I'm trying for that inspiration, that kind of organic idea that that only nature has. It really came down to talking with Joel Aaron and being like, Joel, I'm really worried about these vines. And we glued all the textures on them, but you could still see the connections on them. It's just not enough. So Joel and Josh Rowe worked together to come up with this new program that populates the background with all these little odds and ends and these little branches and ants and bugs and butterflies and creepy crawly things and mist and a sense of humidity. It breaks up that space in a way that the show, the framing, has never in the composition to have that much tiny detail to break up the space. It makes you just feel like you're in this environment, finally. It definitely was a big moment for us visually, and we're definitely going to be using this in the future.
Yeah, you could sort of, now that he's saying that, you could see that in the episode for sure.
Yeah, like, there was a lot, like, they were showing it, and I was like, well, that's a really good way to hide, like, where you might have, like, connections of, like, two digital branches stuck together, have bugs crawl on it.
And they kept things moving, which doesn't let you concentrate too much a lot of the time.
Yeah, God, this is a really pretty episode, though. And I think a lot of it is, like, the difference between, like, the bright kind of blues of Felucia to this, like, really natural jungle. And they're both jungles, but they're both completely different types of jungles. But
yeah, it's not a Dagobah-type jungle. It's a more woodsy, briar patch jungle, like you were saying.
Yeah, but, like, even Felucia looked a lot better on this visit of it. Like, it was a lot, like, I noticed, like, some of the, like, the glowing flowers, like, the flowers.
Felucia's growing. Almost like a big meadow, almost, you know?
Yeah,
this
but, like,
this was, like, an overgrown, you know, forest.
Yeah, but I was, like, noticing, like, more detail in, like, the flowers and the plants in Felucia, too. Like, there was one, like, Ahsoka stepped around this one flower, and you could see all the, it was a yellow flower, but you could see all the purple veins on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt like everything, like all the plants, well, were way better than this one.
I have a screensaver of a lot of the plant production drawings of Felucia plants, and one of them is one of the plant, and they were for the movies. But one of the plants, it had little arrows, and it's like filled with water. And we saw one of them in this episode, and it sort of had little bugs floating in the water inside the plant that was glowing at the same time. So there was a lot going on at the same time, you know? It was really neat.
Yeah. You know, it's also really neat floating in the water by a pool with some ladies.
Ooh.
Bugs. I tried.
I just see Yoda in a little, you know, in an inner tube, little drink.
It rubs the oil on Yoda, or it gets the hose again.
Everyone's like, "Hee hee, Yoda, don't get us with the hose."
All right.
But now I imagine him like floating in one of those like flower plants, and he's just like sipping like they're like.
He's got a little lily pad in the pool.
Yeah, and like they're all in this massive battle, and Yoda's just drinking drinks and watching and just sunbathing in the back.
Kiss the frog, he turns into a prince.
Ew, Yoda. Ew. Don't give us your hose again. Seriously, don't give us your hose again.
Whatever you do.
Without humility, courage is a dangerous game. In bed.
I'm not sure about this one.
This one is working in the reference that I'm surprised Dave Filoni didn't say. And this one is totally, not totally, it's partially the story Most Dangerous Game, where rich people would kidnap hunters and bring them to their island and then hunt them. Because man is the most dangerous game. So, yeah, so it's sort of that. Then, you know, they get one hunter that they've bitten off more than they can chew with. And that's Ahsoka.
I can see that now, okay. So I was trying to figure out this one, how it was, like, working just with the context of the episode. And I was like, I can kind of see it if I squint. But that makes more sense now that you said it like that.
That was a story they made us read in middle school, I think.
I don't think we read that one.
It's been made into a bunch of movies, too.
Yeah. That one is on the list of ones I haven't read yet.
The Most Dangerous Game. I don't remember the author.
So, you ready? Act one?
Act one, I'm ready.
Act one! So apparently the planet Felucia is slowly becoming the new Ryloth, because it's getting invaded again by the Separatists. Anakin, Plo Koon, and Ahsoka are there to help defend the planet against Mr. Clinker Clank Cough Cough himself, General Grievous! So I know that Chris is really happy to see him again.
Oh yeah, he's back.
And then he's not.
Not really, yeah.
That's like my final note of the entire episode was, Chris, I'm sorry there's no Grievous in this episode.
It's a greavy tease.
Master Plo spots droid reinforcements arriving, and they decide to break up into three groups. Plo will take one side, Anakin will take the front gate, and Ahsoka will scale up the back wall. Ahsoka takes her men through the jungles of Felucia. She stops briefly, sensing something that she just assumes is an animal, and they press forward. Everyone is in position, and they start the attack! The droids take the bait and head for Anakin's troops. Plo and his wolf pack! Fly in on jetpacks to join the fray. Ahsoka sends her men up the wall and covers them as they scale up there. Just as Ahsoka is about to come up, she's hit suddenly with a stun net. It's not from a Separatist. It's from a Tradotian named Lo Tirin, who I'm just going to call Lizard Prime. He steals the unconscious Ahsoka and drags her away from the battle. Anakin and Plo Koon take the base, and Ahsoka and Anakin realizes that one of these things is not like the other. He's missing his Padawan. Ahsoka wakes up, hearing Anakin calling her, but Lizard Prime has her communicator. He crushes it. She asks another prisoner what's up. These lizard people crouch as people to hunt for sport, and Ahsoka is like, well, damn it, I guess I'm just going to have to continue being awesome and get out of this. Lizard Prime tells his son, Dar, who I'm just going to call Snakelet, because Snakelet's a cute word. That's what you call baby snakes, a Snakelet. Which is like the cutest little word, Snakelet. Lizard Prime tells his son, Snakelet, that it's time for him to man up and kill the Jedi. And they fly away with Ahsoka in tow. You know, this is a relatively, that was like 7 minutes of the show.
Right, and so we're getting a little Most Dangerous Game, but at the same time they're sort of doing the Transdotians as the Predators from the Predator movie too. There's a little bit of that element. like lizardy predators that just like to hunt. Love the thrill of the hunt. Great lighting.
My only thing is you can't tell them all apart, which is why I just had, I've only named like two of them.
When I first saw Transdotion, I'm like, oh, Bosk is in this, you know, and it's like, oh, no, it's just some random Transdotion. They give them little differences, but yeah, it's hard to tell them apart.
Yeah, Lizard Prime is like black with orange stripes, and his son is like, I think like brown or something. So, I'm sorry, you were saying about lighting.
It was just a well lit. Because there's, you know, a lot of the plants were translucent, and so there were a lot of different light sources. It just looked really nice. There was the Don't Get Cocky line from episode 4.
Yeah.
My only other note is they had some neat cheeseburger-looking plants. They even had, like, little sesame seeds on the top of the buns on them.
I missed those.
Yeah. Next time you watch it, keep an eye out for the cheeseburger plants. It's like they're on McDonald's World.
I'm loving it, except for Ahsoka, who got kidnapped.
But that's about it. It was just all set up. Setting me up for expecting Grievous and then nothing.
I'm sorry, Chris, because I saw Grievous and I was like, yeah, Grievous! We haven't had Grievous in so long, even I'm excited for Grievous! And he was only in the synopsis.
I got a new Clone Wars coloring book that has some Grievous pictures in it, so I might just have to go to those to get my Grievous fix.
You're going to color him and give him, like, sparkles and throw some glitter on it and be
even
like,
though he's mostly white.
He's like cream. You can color him with, like, cream.
I know. I can do blue highlights and stuff, too.
Well, the thing is, like, if you do the cream, it's going to be that, like, really super, like, orangey peach color that's, like, stereotypical. Like, you know, like, when you're coloring and coloring books as a kid, you have to, like, your Caucasian color is, like, super peach, and so everyone comes out kind of, like, an orange tint.
Yeah.
And then, like, your African-Americans are just slightly too dark because you either have, like, brown or flat-out black. And there's no just, like, nice colors for that, so. Man, crayons are weird.
Yeah.
I didn't have really a lot of notes either.
I noticed that.
Yeah, one part was very quick, but, at the beginning, Anakin's talking to some Felucian scouts, and then I realized they were the Fraggles from the Bounty Hunter episode, where the Jedi had to train the farmers how to fight from last season. You remember that episode?
Yes.
So it's really cool to see them come back and that they're now, like, participating in this war as scouts and stuff. So that was kind of, like, a nice, like, little throwback. I didn't even notice that. They were so short, and they were standing in grass, and I thought they were flowers until I saw one move, and I was just like, oh, it's Felucians! Yay, the Fraggles! So I just thought that was a nice little callback, since, like, Anakin helped train them, and now they're participating in this war for their planet. So, that was cool. I'm pretty sure the answer is the show can't... Oh, I'm pretty sure the answer that the show can't always, like, keep the same actors and stuff... But I've noticed that all the tactical droids always have different people voicing them.
Yeah.
So I was just like, wouldn't the Separatists just, like, spend money and just have, like, the same voice always? Just, like, make one voice box?
Maybe it's handy to have them with different voice boxes, so if you're using more than one, you can tell them apart or something. I don't know.
Yeah, and I was thinking, like, people probably like to customize their own droids and stuff.
Sure.
Like how you'd customize your GPS so you don't always, like, have to listen to, like, the boring voice, but you could give it, like, a British voice GPS. My GPS has a British voice. His name is Will Scarlet. So is my phone. And the only other thing I said, Lizard Prime's ship flew away not too terribly far from the battle. And so you would think that the Jedi's, like, other ships, or they have ships up in the, like, atmosphere, or something, someone somewhere should pick up that there's another ship there. And it's not a small ship. It's a big fucking ship.
All I can think of is maybe there were a lot of ships scattering away, so maybe it got lost in the shuffle.
Yeah.
And they also might not have been thinking about her being carted away. He was probably thinking that she got injured or something on Felucia and was somewhere on Felucia, you know?
Yeah, but I still would just be like, somebody, like, should have noticed the ship, and, like, when Ahsoka was missing, someone could be like, hey, a really big fortress just flew away.
Right.
Though this is still also the same land that, like, the planet that, like, Hondo lives on, and we know he has a giant flying saucer, so they would probably have been like, oh, it was probably Hondo and his crew, like, scavenging. Because there's probably, like, a lot of scavengers around battlefields just picking up shit.
Yeah, the they were just sort of a random element there. There was something the Jedi weren't even thinking there were Transdotians there, like, to steal people. They were just sort of, like, just by happenstance, they were where this battle broke out, you know? So nobody really thought of them as to factor them in.
Because it could have been just, like, they were like, oh, they were probably escaping the battle, just like you said, so... Well, that's all I have for Act 1.
Act 2?
Act 2! Let us do it! The lizards arrive back on their moon, and they drop Ahsoka and the other prisoners down on the beach. They shoot all the people on the beach, and Ahsoka is quickly the last person standing. She hurries into the jungle to hide out. Out of the darkness spring three people, Omir, Jinx, and Wiz Khalifa, ready to drop some beads! I'm just kidding, her name's not Wiz Khalifa, it's just Khalifa, but every time I hear that I think about Wiz Khalifa, the rapper. Anyway, so they used to be Jedi younglings, and they lead Ahsoka back to their crib. Khalifa explains that they got jumped on a training mission, so they were never full-fledged Padawans. The lizards aren't strong enough to take on full Jedi Masters. These younglings obviously have been here a very long time. They've given up hope of ever being rescued and only try to stay alive. Back on Felucia, Anakin is flipping his shit that his Padawan is missing, and Rex is like, honey, I'm sorry, but our baby is gone. And Anakin's just like, not good enough, try again. And Rex is all like, oh, you're sleeping on the space couch tonight. And he heads back out to look for him. And Plo Koon is like, dude, stop yelling at your boyfriend. We're done here. We gotta go back to Coruscant. And Anakin is like, I'm not leaving Ahsoka. And Plo Koon is like, get your ass back on the ship or I'm telling Obi-Wan. And Anakin has no choice but to call in Rex and leave Felucia. Khalifa wakes up Ahsoka just before dawn. They have to start moving through the forest to keep their scent away from the hunters so they don't come back to their home. Ahsoka is like, that's your plan? That's a dumb plan. And Khalifa is like, Jedi stuff teaches us that there's wisdom and experience, and we've been here a long time, so shut up and follow us. And Ahsoka has no other choices but to go after them. Up on their ship, floating above the jungle, Lizard Prime has all his dudes together. It's time for them to hunt. They give a lizard whooping redneck yell, and they hop into their space jeeps, and they fly off to the planet. Yeehaw! The younglings spot two people who came in with Ahsoka. Our favorite Padawan wants to help them, but Khalifa says it's too late. The lizard redneck's already found them and shoots one dead. The other one, who is a Jango jumper, and God, I love Jango jumpers, they're so cool. The other one's a Jango jumper running through the forest, but she's also quickly shot down too. Ahsoka watches in horror, but has no other choice but to leave the younglings to survive. Ahsoka and Khalifa get into an argument. Ahsoka wants to act. Khalifa wants to live. They don't have lightsabers or anything to fight. Ahsoka's like, what's wrong with you guys? We're still freaking Jedi. We have the Force. And Khalifa says they're not saviors. They're survivors. Jinx says that there were other Padawans before them, but they're all dead now. And they want to fight, but the cards are stacked against them. And Ahsoka is like, you're younglings, but I'm a freaking Padawan. I have a master who would kick my ass for standing by and doing nothing. If I die, at least I'm going to die with my boots on. And Khalifa is like, you're overestimating your abilities. And Ahsoka is like, I'm not. My master is the fucking chosen one, and that makes me like Jesus or something, so I'm gonna save us today. And Ahsoka leaves their asses behind. What do you think of Act 2, Chris?
I think she's a little hard on them, because she definitely has a lot more training and experience than them.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of makes sense that they're acting the way they are, but she does definitely drop the logic of, like, look, if you keep doing that, you're just going to keep doing that forever till you die, you know?
Yeah, so. I think, like, what Ahsoka does definitely is give them hope, because I get the sense that they've been there a long time.
Yeah, well, she's getting a little practice at being in a master position now.
Yeah, that's one of the best parts of this episode.
And these girls are like the Peter Pan lost, or, you know, it's like the lost younglings, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I like the lizard guy's trophy throne that he has.
How's the, like, Wampa skin on top
of
it? You know, the people sell Wumpa rugs, and I kind of really super want one.
That would be pretty cool. I wish I had room for something like that. I'd have to put it on my bed or something.
I know.
Yeah, and you can get Tauntaun sleeping bags, too.
At Dragon Con, they have Tauntaun races. Sleeping bag races. Zack races.
I think I saw a video of that.
Yeah, I posted a video of that. It was my first Tauntaun race that I ever saw. But it's not like an if you ever go to Dragon Con, it's not an official schedule event. You have to watch kind of like the Star Wars like pages and like stuff like that. That was a few years ago. It might be an actual schedule event, but it's on the 10th floor of the Marriott, and they get in this. They have a sack race around half of the 10th floor of the Marriott, and it's so much fun.
All you need is a Tauntaun sleeping bag.
Yeah. I highly suggest it. It's a really fun time to watch. It's really fast. You're only there for like 20 minutes, but still, it's a really good time.
That's all the notes I had for this part. Wasn't really a lot to comment on.
Yeah, that's the thing about this episode. There's a lot in it, but there's also a lot not in it.
Right.
So Rex is so determined to find his girlfriend Ahsoka.
I mean, actually, most of the character stuff is sort of behind us now in the episode. I think most of the character stuff concerned Anakin having to let go and Ahsoka rallying the troops, you know?
Yeah.
And taking on a leadership position.
Yeah.
And it's all action.
So my notes are, I do think it's really cool that Clone Wars has always introduced really big concepts to kids in ways that they can understand. And this week, this is essentially an episode about human trafficking.
Yeah, I know, with kids, too.
I know, but the thing is, it's what's actually happening in our real world, you know?
Except just not with lizard people.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, that's essentially, like, that's what this episode is. Here's an episode.
I don't know. There's some people who probably believe that there's lizard people kidnapping kids and hunting them down. I shouldn't discount that. I'll need to check the internet, but I'm sure that's actually, could actually be happening.
This is a kind of a cool thing. When the younglings get back to their base, outside on the tree, and you can see them throughout the entire episode,
Yes. There's
these little bird-like creatures. Do you know what those are?
I recognize them because...
They're in Rebels.
And you notice they keep adding ones to it as time goes on, too.
Yeah. So those are called Convors. These creatures got a lot of notice around Rebels time because the Convors in Rebels would only appear when Ahsoka was there. And then after a while, Ezra started noticing them too. So like, you know, before they went off to do the big finale, like for example with Darth Vader, so like Ezra was laying on his back and he looks up and he sees a Convor, and then Ahsoka leans over him. And they're called Convorees when they're in plural. This is the first appearance of Convorees is this episode. So I was like really super excited to see them. Because, and then I copy and paste this from the Wikipedia. Convorees are named after Dave Filoni's wife, Anne Convery. When asked about the bird's appearance in the Mystery of Chopper Base and the Twilight of their Apprentice finale, he responded, "There was a deeper meaning behind its presence, these little birds," and finally acknowledged, "In some ways, I could say that it's a messenger, it's an observer, it is definitely something, and I would suggest... I would rather have fans debate, but I would suggest to say that whatever that thing is, an avatar of actual... Good Lord, Dave Filoni, your grammar. Whatever that thing is, an avatar of has actually appeared in the animated Star Wars universe before. So decrypt from there. Have a fun summer." So I've seen... I think my favorite theory about the Convery that I've seen is that, like, they're actually other Jedi and stuff that have gone into the Force, and they've taken the form of these Converies.
And that's where they sort of manifest to check things out when something important's happening.
Yeah, and I've also seen that they're kind of like Watchers, like in Marvel comics, they're kind of like the Watchers too. But it's interesting that this is their very first episode, and this is Ahsoka's big episode, where she's really stepping up.
Well, there's supposed to be some cute... bird-like creatures that live on the island with Luke Skywalker in episode 8 coming up.
So maybe they're
Jedi. Maybe they're convoys.
I would love to see if they were convoys, because, like, after this, like, convoys were in the two, like, big Ahsoka appearances. Because mm-hmm. that's when I first started, a lot of people started talking about them, because they would only show up when Ahsoka shows up. And this is, like, Ahsoka's really first big, massive leadership role among the Jedi. And she actually, I wrote it somewhere in my notes, I don't remember where, but how she's talking to them kind of actually reminds me of a lot of how she works with Ezra and Kanan. Especially because they're like, Ahsoka's give us information, and she's like, haha, I'm not a Jedi anymore. Let's do it our way. So I just thought it was really interesting. Like, the moment I saw it, I was just like, oh my god, a Convery! So, I had to point it out. I think it totally makes sense for Anakin to be freaking out a lot about missing Ahsoka. Mortis Citadel and these episodes are in chronological order. So he's almost lost Ahsoka twice in about the last, like, seven-ish episodes. And he almost lost her twice to some voice guys, and then she got snuck up on, like, she snuck in on a very dangerous mission to the Citadel, and he was able to save those both times. But this is the moment, like, that Ahsoka leaves his sight, and then she gets kidnapped, and it's not helping Anakin's attachment issues, and he's gonna turn into a helicopter
parent. Oh, yeah.
I'm just waiting for, like, helicopter Anakin, like, Ahsoka starts walking off, and he's just like, where are you going, Snips?
What do you know?
Like, to the bathroom? He's like, hold my hand! We're just walking across the hallway. Hold my hand, Snips. Anakin's gonna turn into a helicopter parent, and I can't wait. In the past seasons, this is my last note. In the past season, especially season one, Ahsoka was a lot of talk with no experience to back it up. She was very brash, and she was thought highly of herself, and it got her in trouble a lot. And we saw that it killed her men on a couple occasions. This is the episode I think is a really good example of how much Ahsoka has grown over the course of three seasons. When she tells Khalifa that she is not overestimating her powers, Ahsoka is not bragging in that moment. Because, like, she actually speaks quite humbly, because Khalifa was like, don't overestimate yourself. And she just looks and goes, I'm not. I mean, it's not a bragging moment for her. She's speaking the truth. And she's been through hell and back, and she knows that she can handle some hunters. This is the Ahsoka who has the means to back up her mouth. And Ahsoka, this is not the Ahsoka from the movie anymore. This isn't the brash little snippy kid that showed up.
No.
So it's really cool to see her evolve from that point. I think this is, like, her first major test of, like, I'm really truly on my own.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep. I'm in a situation, I gotta get out of it and get back to the Jedi.
Yeah.
And nobody's coming to help me.
So I think that's, it's such a quiet little moment, but, like, when she looks at Khalifa and goes, I'm not overestimating myself, that is, I think, one of the most strongest Ahsoka moments, but it's because she's not bragging. She's so humble about it. She's just like, I'm just not. I'm doing my thing. I can handle this. So, yeah. Well, that's all I have.
All right, Act 3, I guess. That would
act
be the next
three.
Act.
There's going to be some short little episodes. Alright, so, Act 3. Ahsoka creeps through the jungle, getting the lay of the land. She calls for the lizards, trying to get them to come out. One hunter appears, and Ahsoka ambushes him and uses the Force. The hunter gets the upper hand. Before he can shoot Ahsoka, Khalifa and the others arrive, and Khalifa Force chokes him. Khalifa is pissed, and she starts strangling the guy. Ahsoka hurries over and coaxes Khalifa not to kill him out of hatred. That is not the Jedi way. She releases the hunter, but the guy whoops up to his other redneck buds to help him. They turn around their space jeeps, and then they speed off that way. The younglings use the Force to knock out the hunter, and they flee back into the forest. Ahsoka takes the hunter's blaster with her. That night, Ahsoka tries to get the hunter's blaster to work, but the hunters deactivate the guns when they're taken away. That's why the younglings don't have any of the blasters. Khalifa stands up. She gives a speech like, Okay, this might come off a bit strong, but we're all getting girl crushes on you, Ahsoka. You're, like, super awesome and pretty, and you fought in all these battles, and we never got to fight in battles, and so with your military experience, we can take back what we lost. And we're Jedi, and you're, like, clean Jedi, and we'll follow your lead. Did I mention that you're super pretty and strong and amazing? And Ahsoka's like, all right, we need more information. Tomorrow we go out and figure out where they're coming from. Up in the redneck base, Snakelet's getting all pumped up with his bros. They're all chanting, "Snakelet, Snakelet," and he's all chest bumping and high-fiving, and Lizard Prime christens his son for the hunt. The next day, the Padawans are out and about in the forest. They can't seem to find the base anywhere on the island. Omer then spots up in the sky their fortress all the way up there above the clouds. Space jeeps come swooping in for them. Jinx and Omer head one way, and Ahsoka flees with Khalifa the other way. There's lots of running and pew-pew-pews from the rednecks until finally Khalifa falls off a tree and down to the forest floor. Lizard Prime sends Snakelet down to finish her off. Khalifa is hurt, but trying to scramble away. Snakelet arrives, and Khalifa keeps him off of the forest. Just before he can shoot her, Ahsoka jumps in and deflects his blaster away with the force. Snakelet is like, "Just let me kill you!" And Ahsoka spider monkey jumps on him, and they fight. And Snakelet charges her, but she finally throws him off the rock. He falls on some massive thorns, which impale him, killing the little Snakelet. Goodbye, Snakelet. Ahsoka returns to Khalifa and helps her up, and then a blaster bolt shoots through Khalifa from behind. Lizard Prime is pissed. The Jedi killed his little Snakelet. He's shooting wildly at them, but he can't get his jeep closer to them. Khalifa begs Ahsoka to take care of the others for her. Khalifa dies, and Ahsoka has no other choice but to leave her body behind. Meanwhile, Anakin is on Coruscant, freaking out over the star charge, trying to find his Padawan. Plo Koon comes in, listing all the ways that Ahsoka is strong. Plo tells Anakin that if he trained her well, Ahsoka will find her way back. He just needs to trust her. The end.
Aww.
Aww.
These guys, they're sort of like the Predators, but when they're getting all pumped up and stuff, they're kind of like Klingons, too.
I don't know. I came back from a redneck wedding last weekend, and it just reminded me of the wedding.
Like Klingons, yeah.
Rednecks are Klingons, apparently.
Man, poor control freak Anakin. Not good for control freak Anakin, this sort of situation. But one thing that I kept thinking is, if you're in these woods, why not make some spears, you know, some bows and arrows, like bolos where you tie, two rocks onto a piece of rope and piece of vine and can swing them around and whip them at people, you know?
Do you think that maybe that the Jedi didn't teach them that?
I don't know. I would think that they would, at least, or at least, even if they didn't teach them that, it's still not a big leap to make a pointy stick, you know?
I know, though I do have to say, in their defense, in the Kanan comic, Kanan was, like, after Order 66, he nearly starved to death because the Jedi did not teach him survival. He was like, "I literally don't know how to make a fire." I don't know how to make fire. He didn't know how to make money. He didn't know how to do any jobs. So I don't know if it was just something that... It kind of makes me wonder, because you remember how last week we were talking about how Anakin and Ahsoka were raised in two different time periods, and one was raised in a peacetime, and one was raised in war? I get the sense that, like, Ahsoka and Kanan got their time rushed, like, you know, because they had to be Padawans and get out in this war. So it makes me kind of wonder about, like, Khalifa and all these kids, because maybe they were raised in the peacetime, so they were like, you know, you would eventually learn survival.
Even so, if you're a Jedi and you're going on missions and stuff, you could end up, your spaceship could crash in a storm or something. You'd think they would teach you some basic survival skills.
And because they got kidnapped, they weren't full Padawans yet. They were only younglings, so I get the sense that they've been there for a long last time. That's why, because younglings, I think,
at least make some booby traps and stuff like that, like the goddamn Ewoks.
Yeah, because, like, Ahsoka was 14 when she became a Padawan. And these kids never once said they were Padawans. They were like, "No, we were younglings and we got kidnapped on a training mission." So I'm wondering if they just hadn't learned those skills yet. But I do agree, it's not a big jump to make a pointy stick. But I don't know. I'm thinking that they might not have been trained that. And also, that's just more for Dave Filoni to animate. pointy sticks are expensive.
I guess so.
They're really expensive, and they have, like, all these bugs. Look at the bugs. Look at the butterflies. Follow the butterflies. Follow the butterflies. Very, very, very ancient Harry Potter Puppet Pals reference.
Yeah, but man, they're killing kids in Clone Wars.
You know, I said that somewhere. This is a very brutal episode. They don't pull any punches in this one. And I think the difference between this one is, like, say, than, like, the Battle of Geonosis.
This is next to the last episode of this season, right?
Yeah.
So they're making it, like, seem like maybe, you know, something could happen to Ahsoka. You know, because this is a storyline of the last episode, so it's like, whoa, something big could happen, you know? And it being so brutal, you're starting to think, like, oh, you know, who knows what could happen.
And I think it's, like, extra brutal because, like, say, like, something like the Battle of Ryloth or the Battle of Geonosis, where it's, like, hundreds of clones dying. But the thing is, it's all happening at once. You don't really, like, focus on any of it.
Yeah, this is personal.
Yeah, like, this is, like, small deaths. Like when they kill the Jango Jumper, you hear her just go, ah! And, like, if you see their face, like, every person who's shot, you see their face when they die. And it's also showing kind of, like, the seedier side of war. Because, like I said, I mean, like, every war has human trafficking and prostitution and prisoners of war and slavery and, like, POW camps and stuff. And so, like, we're just seeing a little snippet of war in Star Wars time.
Yep.
So, like, this is actually a super real episode, even though it's, like, you know, in a galaxy far, far away.
This is just, like, the normal shittiness that happens, whether there's war or not, you know? I get the feeling the Transdotians are just, like, this is generally the way they live their life.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the war just made it easier.
Yep.
I'm sure they didn't get many Jedi running around before the war started.
No, it was a lot easier.
Yeah.
Just wait for battles to break out. They're breaking out all over the place anyway.
Some of my other notes. Looking over the course of the season, we've seen Ahsoka step up, like, little bit by little bit. Like, we saw her, like, lead the Mandalorian kids at the academy, and then she has all these clones under her command, and now we're seeing her guide these younglings. And when she talked to Khalifa out of killing the hunters, it kind of reminded me of older Ahsoka with Kanan and Ezra and Rebels, and slowly but surely she's becoming Fulcrum, and I love it! You know, did you hear about that story about the big game hunter that shot an elephant and the elephant died on him?
Yes.
And it killed him? That's how I feel about Snakelet and Lizard. Yes. Name.
Yeah, there's no, I have no shits saved up to give to these two guys.
Yeah, it's not like a Cedric Diggory dying in Harry Potter and Amos Rains down. He's just like, that's my son! It's not like that. It's a big elephant falling on top of a big game hunter kind of a feeling.
Yes.
You're like, that's what karma gets you. That's what you get for killing elephants. And the final scene with Plo Koon and Anakin. I actually really like that it's Plo Koon and Anakin and not Obi-Wan there. Because Plo Koon was the one that found Ahsoka, and Anakin is her master. And Plo Koon doesn't go in there like Obi-Wan. Like, if it was Obi-Wan, he'd be like, oh, Anakin, your attachments, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, or wet blanket, yep.
Yeah, but Plo Koon, you know, he's known Ahsoka. He knew Ahsoka first. And he flat out, what he does is, he's like, Anakin, tell me what makes Ahsoka strong. And he makes Anakin say all the things that are Ahsoka's strengths. And I think that's a really cool moment because Plo's putting that idea of hope back inside Ahsoka, back inside Anakin. And I think that's a really nice thing, and we haven't quite seen anybody do that with Anakin. And so I'm actually really glad that they used Plo Koon in there because out of everybody else in the Jedi Order, he's known Ahsoka longer than Anakin. And I think he recognizes that that's what Anakin needs there. And I think that's a cool, like, Jedi Master thing that he did.
Yeah.
And my final note, poor Chris, they teased Grievous in the beginning, and he's not actually in the episode.
I knew it wasn't gonna be. And I know he won't be back in the next one either, so here's to season 4. maybe I'll see you there, Greavy.
He was in season 3, though. He was just in the opening
Just not an awful lot.
Yeah.
He was kind of like Rex this episode.
Yeah, Rex and Grievous went off and like had just tea in the season.
It was a tough season.
The first half was tough with all the politics.
Yep.
That was a really rough patch. It was a thing. Well, I don't have anything else. How would you grade it up, Chris?
I didn't have a lot to say about this episode and a lot of notes, but I really like this episode. I like it more than the last episode. I gave it an 8.5. It's got all the great elements of it. It starts out with a battle and then into the main story, and we got good character moments, and it paid off their attempts at making the space of the place work, and it's just a very exciting and fast moving episode. This one went by like when I was watching it, I'm like, oh, it's over already, wow. So yeah, 8.5. I really like this one.
Yeah, for me, like, I have to agree, it went by super fast, and a lot of it was just fighting, so it's like a 3-minute fight scene, and I'd be like, and then they punch those lizards, yay, which is always nice for me, like, instead of, like, when I have to break down, like, line-by-line shit, so I always like that when we have two episodes to record in a night, and I can watch these really fast. For me, I really like this episode a lot, too. They don't pull a lot of punches on this one. It's brutal from beginning to end. And it's nice to see Ahsoka stepping up and using everything that she's learned over 3 seasons. She's really grown up a lot, and I'm so proud of her. I'm proud of Ahsoka in this one. I love her. Again, Anakin is losing his cool, but I like seeing Plo Koon taking on that Obi-Wan role with him. And in the end, like, this is Ahsoka's finale. This is her checking in with the fans and to show the fans exactly how far she's come and where she is going, and it is her trip and her finale. So I gave it an 8 out of 10.
All right, so we're close on this one. Yeah, this is a really good one. I like this one a lot.
Yeah, because I was thinking about it, and I was like, originally I was like, I'm not a big fan of this one, but then I started thinking, I was like, when was the last time I watched this finale? And it's been a while, and I was like, yeah, I liked this a lot more than I remember that I liked it before. So, and the youths aren't as annoying as the little Mandalorian youths we had like earlier in the season.
No, these guys are a little more. These guys are a little more realistic, I guess.
Yeah,
that's the only way I could think to put it.
They're not. I think it might help that they don't all look the same too.
Yeah.
Like one's a Twi'lek. One, I don't know what Omir's race is, but one's a Twi'lek, so that helps because you can tell them apart.
it's a more serious episode, so it's like. They're all different and stuff, but you don't have as much time to be like, this guy is the quirky one or whatever, you know, it's just in the action, so it takes a little more serious feel to it.
Yeah. So, as always, we would love to hear your feedback, and good lord, you guys helped us this time. You can leave us feedback on iTunes, which we actually really like because it helps people find the show, or on Twitter or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. And here it is, guys. We wanted it. We asked for feedback, and you guys gave it to us. This is from our episode, Overlords, where Chris and I fought over the Mortis arc. Here we go.
All right. First off is Patrick Delmore says, I haven't listened yet, but I have to ask. I introduced people to Clone Wars with, and this is one of them. The other really? Is the Boba Fett arc. I'm excited to hear which... Who is... What? Sorry, I gotta start this over again.
You have to... You use the Mortis arc to introduce people to Clone Wars?
Okay. I'm gonna read this...
Do you hate them?
Some people really like it, I guess.
I like the first episode. That's it.
Alright, and then Aaron Henley says, the Mortis trilogy. Oh, there will be feedback. Trust me. And here it comes. And then Patrick Delmore's back. Alrighty! Just listen to the episode. I agree with Chris about a lot of points on this, but I still love the episode. Uh-huh. It's definitely a Star Trek-type plot. Next Generation Season 7, I'd say. However, what happens here is reinterpretations of things that we already know happened. The Fall of Anakin is the scene where he marries Padme at the end of Episode 2. Mortis is a puppet show put on for Anakin's benefit by the Force. But in the end, Obi-Wan and Ahsoka get more out of the experience than Anakin does. Anakin is reminded by the sun that he has already failed. There is no hope in these three episodes for Anakin. Ahsoka gets told that if she continues to follow her master, she is doomed. Later on, she will cut ties to the Jedi. We see Obi-Wan meet Qui-Gon, who reaffirms that any situation is dangerous for Anakin to be in. It's not just this one. To Chris's point that Qui-Gon is real, but Shmi and the old Ahsoka are just manifestations of the son and the daughter, I think either it's all real or it's all Mortis trying to communicate on a base level with the three. I lean to Mortis did it all, and Obi-Wan hasn't really communicated with Qui-Gon yet. We know that at the end of episode 3 that Yoda has set it up so they will talk, though. Oh my god, it keeps going. I don't recall where I heard it. This hurts. But Darth Vader, who we see for the first time in the third part of this, is supposed to be a form of Dark Father. Balance is brought to the Force by bringing Luke and Leia into the world. If Anakin didn't love Padme, he would have stayed on Mortis and Windu would have killed Palpatine. Instead, Anakin has to live in constant pain for however many years it was before his own son helped him realize there was good in him and that he could kill the Emperor.
Do you want me to take James?
No, I got it.
Okay.
Gene Hendricks says, for your information, in the Phantom Menace, Anakin was in the room when Qui-Gon and the Jedi Council were talking about him being the Chosen One.
Yeah.
You're right, Gene. I forgot that. Gene. Aaron Henley says, okay, I haven't listened to the episode yet, but I did rewatch the show and I promised feedback. So there's a lot of talk about that, but I'll try to keep it brief. Right. First up, the animation was unbelievably amazing in this episode.
Thank you, Chris. Chris can suck it. I thought the animation was really nice in the episode, too. Thank you. Suck it, Chris.
Moving on. The way the environments change from lush forests to desolate deserts and back again, and on a TV budget. Now on to the main event, the Force Wielders. Are they an advanced race with an unprecedented mastery of the Force, all but lost to time? Aspects of the Force itself? Something in between? To be honest, I have to go with advanced race, because if they were aspects of the light, neutral, dark side, which shouldn't be, since there's, you know, three and we only have two sides, at least until episode 8 comes out, maybe.
I can't remember. I don't think Aaron is in season 3 of Rebels yet. So I don't think he's met Bindu on this point.
Oh, okay.
Because he was chatting with about the other day. He was like, I can't wait to watch season 3. Because I think he's been getting like the DVDs when they come out.
Oh, okay.
So I don't think he's met Bindu yet. So I just want to clarify that I do, like, neutral is kind of like a new side.
It's on its way for you.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good, Aaron. I can't wait for you to watch it.
Then wouldn't they know that Anakin was the Chosen One off the bat and not put him through trials to prove it? The guy's been told since he was 10 that he's the Chosen One. It wasn't a big secret to anyone in the Jedi Order. Granted, the final Darth Maul episode of Rebels changed that all up, but I'm writing in context of this episode and when this came out, or trying to at least. Just in case you didn't comment on the sun's bat transformation, bat-type demon creatures have long been a staple of dark side influences throughout the Legends universe, so it's a nice little callback. Also, Sam Witwer! I think because of his performance as a sun is what got him the gig as Maul. He's actually a very insightful Star Wars fan. I'd recommend checking out his commentaries of the original Star Wars movie that he did with Rebel Force Radio, because, man, did he put Episode 3 into a whole new context for me.
So I have to listen for that. I keep forgetting that Sam Witwer is on Rebel Force Radio podcast. I keep forgetting that. That's actually where he announced he was going to be on Once Upon a Time, and I'm like, what?
So now on to what you guys said, and Harley. Cue the Rocky IV opening theme. We've got podcasts ready for a fight. And then Paul C. Kelly said, For me, this is the first time I saw this. It did not seem like what I would want is representation of the Force. I would not think it possible for the Force to interact so directly. I agree. It would make more sense if this were a dream. Interesting is listening to this, I was reminded of several movies for the most part and one video game. The Force Wielders reminded me a little of Espers in Final Fantasy VI or III for SNES. The encounters with memories like Anakin's mother strangely reminded me when Bill and Ted in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey are in hell, and when they are presented with horrifying past of their young horrifying parts of their young past and told to choose their eternity. That is pretty accurate, actually. What's really been overdone is forcing someone to choose between who they are and who they should save. Haha. A few samples: Batman Forever, Batman the Dark Knight, Spider-Man 2. I believe he is to choose between civilians and his love, finally. The Good Son, where she chooses between Macaulay Culkin or Elijah Wood.
Oh, I forgot about that movie. I like that movie.
Elijah was a better choice anyway, as far as acting careers went. True. Watching this episode a second time, I realized this was made more for Ahsoka's character. It was accepted more, but still do not think the Force would come bluntly in your face like that. I agree. And Mike Zumo said, didn't Anakin say in one of the movies, I'm not the Jedi I should be. Revenge of the Sith, maybe. I think it was Revenge of the Sith when he and Obi-Wan were splitting off to go in different directions. I think that was the conversation they had. And Aaron Henley said, I think it was episode 2 when he was going on his whole Obi-Wan's holding me back speech with Padme in Lars Garage. That could be too.
Yeah. Thank you guys for providing so much feedback. We asked and you guys gave it. So
that
really
was some feedback. I did almost as much reading as you did this week.
I know, and Chris, I don't know how you read that entire thing in Patrick Delmer's voice.
It hurt.
How does this open?
It twists. It's candy time, folks.
Oh, it's stuck together. Sorry, my paper was stuck together, so I didn't have an opening.
I'm a notorious hater of American candy, especially American Kit Kats. And our buddy Dario Gonzalez has fixed that by going... He just travels all the war over the world for the sole purpose of bringing Hope and I different kinds of candy.
Then he's a flight attendant. Mine's split in half.
This one is called Sonho de Valsa. And let me see. I've got his note here.
Mine's split in half, so I opened it and I can already see that there's a white center inside of a chocolate.
Oh, there's no... This is from Brazil. This is a Brazilian candy.
There's like a cookie inside it.
There's a cookie inside of it?
It's like a wafer.
I haven't gotten it open. Enough. I love wafers.
But it's not like a wafer. It's like, there's a ball of white chocolate, because like I said, mine broke in half.
Whoa.
And then there's a wafer ball around it, and then like milk chocolate around that.
That was not what I expected.
Oh no! It's crunchier.
It's got an immediate flaky crunch right under the first layer of chocolate.
Oh no.
It's sort of like a less liquidy version of those. It's similar to those Ferrero Rocher candies.
With less nuts on top.
I love wafer.
I'm stretching the wafer in the middle.
No, that's what makes it.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's nuts and the nougat in the middle of it, too. Or maybe that's just pieces of wafer that have broken off in there.
No, I think you're right. I think they're nuts. They're not as thin as the wafer.
This is really good.
I know. Because if it didn't have that wafer in the middle, then it would just be, like, just sweet on sweet. So that's a really nice, like, separation of texture. As always, thank you, Dario. We love you.
We love candy.
Not just because you send us candy, we actually do love you because you're a great person.
We were quite fond of you before you started sending candy, but this just sort of cements it, man.
Totally. Well, where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com, where I sit upon my Wampa throne and eat candy all day. And lord over all the other podcasters there. And oh my god, we have so many podcasts.
I'm just imagining like Game of Wampa Thrones.
It is like a Scrooge McDuck money pit of podcasts. I know I've made that comparison before.
It's okay.
But
it's
I like it.
Really happy because they're doing a DuckTales reboot, and I'm super excited for it.
Except unlike Scrooge McDuck, I swim naked in our podcast.
Ugh.
Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of me in every podcast you download from twotruefreaks.com.
Slow down there, Yoda.
And you can go to our Facebook page, which is Two True Freaks on Facebook, and we've got a Two True Freaks Cantina, which is another page where that's where we just go to chat and post up those weird articles and talk about the latest nerd stuff. Mm. And Gene Gene, the podcasting machine, is responsible for our Twitter page. So I'm guessing that's like twotruefreaks@twitter.com.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
And, ooh, I got it right. Mm. Oh, man, I'm just sugar rushing out here. But, yeah, go download podcasts. We got everything. Star Trek, Star Wars, Superman, Walking
Jonah
Dead.
Jonah Hex,
yeah. Well, there hasn't been a new Jonah Hex podcast in years, but...
But it's still there, and we have, like, babes and bots and bugs and anime and books.
Wrestling and giant monsters. We got everything.
And Trent is punching reality.
Mm-hmm. The occasional Doctor Who podcast. Yeah.
When you said you were like all sugar rushed out, I imagine like you leaned all the way back in your chair, gripping the armrest, eyes big and dilated, just like ha ha ha.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I don't have enough hair for my hair to blow back, but it would be if it was long enough.
They're blowing back.
Hair on my back is blowing back.
The hair on my ass is blowing out.
That's the only significant hair on my body these days.
You're not a hairy ass kind of guy.
Oh no! I got a hairy ass. I got enough hair on my ass to weave an Indian basket, as a matter of fact.
Oh man.
That was a line in a song in one of my bands I was in, if you can believe that.
That was like one of the like the worst like moments. My sister's first husband had an affinity for mooning people. Like, he just loved mooning people, and so I saw how hairy his Wookiee ass more times than I can count.
His gorilla ass. Actually, gorillas have those bald asses, so.
No, it was a Wookiee ass.
Yeah. No, I'm not quite Robin Williams level of fur, but I've got a good amount of. In my 20s, it definitely went from my head down to the back, just sort of rolled down a couple feet, foot or two. Anyway, where can people find you?
It's like a long silence.
Let's just skate right away from that topic.
I just love, well, sadly your silence, like, cutter outer thing would probably, like, pick that up.
That was where I was starting to realize, yeah, maybe it's time to change the subject.
But you guys, you don't know, you guys didn't hear the long-ass silence that just happened just now. Well, you can find me at Jigas and Jedi on Twitter. That is our Twitter page. And I'd like to, since we're in hiatus right now with Rebels and everything, I'd pretty much just be like, that looks cool, let me retweet that. And sometimes I post other, like, little funny pictures, too, or little snippets of, I just snip, like write it, put in, like, little snippets of our episode notes. Like, if I write something that I like, particularly self-high-five myself on, I like to put that up there. You can also find me at Hope Mullimax on Twitter, and I'm also the news writer for What the Fangirl. But since we did two episodes tonight, exactly what I said about an hour ago when we last recorded last week's episode, I haven't done anything in the last hour, so there's nothing new. You don't have any reason to go look at that.
Yeah, but it's been a week for all of them.
Yeah, it's true. Hopefully I'll get back on track and just... The reason I've been kind of taking a step back on What the Fangirl is I am literally like 7 scenes away from finishing the first draft of volume 1 of my novel. So that's taking like pretty much I'm just trying to push through volume 1 so I could take a tiny break and then start writing volume 2. And I'm like 7 scenes away from doing it. So I'm really just kind of trying to push through that right now. So... It's taking, like, pretty much all my writing juices and all my thinking and everything to do this. So I've kind of like taken a tiny step back from what the fangirl, but it's not a permanent step back. It's more of a, I really just want to get the first draft of a novel done. So yeah, that's the thing. So yay.
I think that's a worthy sacrifice anyway.
Yeah. But what the fangirl pays me, the novel doesn't pay me. They're really cool with it, though. It's fine. So, yeah, just check us out over at whatthefangirl.com. Yeah. Well, thank you for at least knowing that it's a worthy cause, Chris. That makes me feel nice.
Yeah, come back next week and we're polishing off season 3.
Oh, God, we are, aren't
mm-hmm.
we?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
So get ready, because there's a roundup coming up after that.
I always love our roundups. Those are always my... Like, as much as I love doing, like, all the episodes weekly to weekly, I really love
the
doing
roundups. The roundups are fun, yeah.
This is going to be a very interesting one, though, because it's like the tale of two seasons. Like, the first half sucked, but the second half was good.
Well, definitely, so. Yeah. The high points and the low points are going to be in real stark relief of each other.
Yeah, because I have to say, like, it'll be interesting. I kind of want to put out a question that's something along the lines of, like, how would you redo this season? Because definitely the first half was the jumbled mix. But then starting with Night Sisters, it was, like, chronological, straight through, yeah. One after another. So, it's going to be interesting. So, well, I guess until next time, don't run into lizard rednecks in their jeeps. In the back
avoid the lizard people. Avoid the lizard people.
I'm surprised you didn't give like you gotta put some like Dukes of Hazzard music somewhere in this one or something.
Oh, I'm sure to have some redneck tunes in there.
Well, I guess we'll see you guys next time. Yeah!
Yeah!
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at TwoTrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at TwoTrueFreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O. TrueFreaks.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at TwoTrueFreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Children, the lights are out and the party's over. It's time for me, Dr. D, to start running and say goodbye for a little while. And I know you're gonna miss me, so I'll leave you with this. You know that big ball of radiation we call the sun? Well, it'll burst you into flames if you stay in one place too long. That is if the static don't get you first. So remember, even if you're dusted, you may be gone. But out here in the desert, your shadow lives on without you. This is Dr. Death Defying, signing off.